Lecture 18, Filling the Ranks.
As the war dragged on and increased in fury, both sides sought to cope with a seemingly insatiable demand for more soldiers, ever larger numbers of soldiers to keep the ranks in the armies filled. This lecture will examine that search for manpower in the Confederacy and in the Union. And we'll start with the Confederacy. The Confederacy began the war with no regular army, as we've seen before, and it never really set one up. The South fought the war with volunteer soldiers overwhelmingly, almost exclusively. Only some of the regular officers who had resigned from the United States Army and a handful of enlisted men expected to make the military their permanent profession in the Confederacy. Almost all of the men who fought went into the Army to do their duty during the war with the expectation that they would be going back home as soon as the war was settled. There were state militias in each of the states of the Confederacy, organizations that made all able-bodied white men of draft age liable for service at the request of the governor. The Southern state militias played only a minor role in the war, however, their services generally being restricted to meeting emergencies as federal armies penetrated into the Confederacy. They did not play a mainline role in the great battles of the war and the great campaigns of the war. That burden fell on volunteers, the volunteers who, as I said just a minute ago, expected to return to civilian life as soon as fighting ended. This was the United States tradition. Those kinds of volunteers traditionally had done the bulk of the fighting in America's wars. Most recently, that had been the case in the war against Mexico. There was no shortage of soldiers at the beginning of the war. On March 6, 1861, which is 6 weeks before Fort Sumter was fired upon, the Confederate Congress authorized 100,000 volunteers, and many more than that responded. Men poured to the recruiting stations. Hundreds of thousands of men, in fact, offered themselves in the first few months of the war. They came in such numbers that the governments, both the local governments, the state governments, and the national government, couldn't arm and equip them efficiently, couldn't begin to train them efficiently in the beginning. The Confederacy was awash in potential soldiers as the war loomed just ahead. Two laws in May 1861 provided for an additional 400,000 men, bringing the total to 500,000. Now, roughly half of those men volunteered for 12 months' service. The rest of them volunteered for a three-year hitch, which meant that by early summer 1862, about half of the men wearing Confederate uniforms would be eligible to leave the Army. And by the fall of 1861, Confederate political and military leaders were nervously eyeing the following spring with the notion in mind that their armies might dwindle considerably as those 12-month volunteers exited from the service. Enlistments by that time, by the fall of 1861, were slowing noticeably in the South. The Great Rush had come and gone. One Confederate general in Virginia wrote in late October 1861, "The first flush of patriotism led many a man to join who now regrets it. The prospect of winter here is making the men very restless, and they are beginning to resort to all sorts of means to get home." In early 1862, Jefferson Davis and his advisors recognized that they had to take action to keep the ranks filled in the upcoming spring campaign. The departure of all those 12 months' men would leave the Confederacy extremely vulnerable to major northern advances. In December of 1861, the Confederate Congress had offered a $50 bounty, a month's leave, and the opportunity to join new regiments if they wanted to, as inducements to have men reenlist. But those measures failed to achieve very much. Only a trickle of soldiers decided to reenlist as a result of those measures. And by March 1862, Robert E. Lee, who was then President Davis's chief military advisor, together with Davis and a number of others in the Confederate administration, including the Secretary of War, pushed for a national conscription law, a draft, a countrywide draft, which would be the first of its kind in American history.